This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm Dr. Marianne Ritchie. The American Cancer Society is a leading cancer-fighting organization with a goal to end cancer. Every cancer for every person. Through advocacy, research, patient support, and to help everyone prevent, detect, treat, and survive cancer. Now, each year, the American Cancer Society publishes two reports. One is called Cancer Statistics, the other, Cancer Facts and Figures. They provide current statistics on the occurrence, death rate, and survival from cancers, estimates of new cancers for the coming year listed by cancer type, how they vary by each state, and information on cancer symptoms, risk factors, early detection, and treatment. Joining us today is the lead author of these two annual reports, who also directs production of 7 facts and figure publications, each about a different specific cancer. Rebecca Siegel, she's a cancer epidemiologist and the Senior Director of Surveillance Research at the American Cancer Society. Welcome, Becky.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you, because these are such important messages. And if people understand patterns and what they can do to prevent or be able to talk to their doctor more clearly, they're going to be more committed. So thanks to you, because as I said to you earlier, this is my favorite go-to website. It's beautifully well-written, it's clear, it's comprehensive, and I encourage all of our listeners, we'll repeat this website several times through the show, cancer.org, and you could go to Cancer Facts and Figures. So Becky, let's start with your role at the American Cancer Society. You're an epidemiologist. Can you explain what that is and what your role is?
Sure. So an epidemiologist studies disease patterns and their causes. So my role at ACS is to follow or track cancer occurrence and also to look for emerging trends as well as disparities or gaps in the cancer burden. And we find these disparities between populations as well as between states because there are so many differences in the different states.
And I love the intro to Cancer Facts and Figures. You mentioned right out front, at least 42% of newly diagnosed cancers in the U.S. are potentially avoidable. If we ballpark, about 19% are caused by smoking. About 18% are from a combination of excess weight, excess alcohol consumption, or lack of physical activity. And we hear this mentioned in the news a lot, and people referring to these categories. Of course, it's probably not a good idea to be overweight. Of course, activity helps with your heart, cardiovascular health, and your mental health, and all those things. And we can explain why, but I think today we should focus on, as you say, you're a watchdog. You look at the patterns, and then other people explain the whys. because we don't always know. You know, people say, can cell phones increase the risk for brain cancer? We don't know. Some of those things like exposure to chemical plants or electromagnetic fields of high wires, they're too hard to study. So you're great at looking at the patterns themselves, and then we know what direction to look in for answers. Is that a good way to say it?
That's a great way to say it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
So you mentioned, too, in the early parts of Facts and Figures, there are certain cancers that we now know result from infection, HPV, and we're going to talk about that more in detail. Initially, we're just vaccinating girls because we thought cervical cancer, but then we know that with sexual activity, that boys can be vectors or carriers as well, so we're vaccinating. But HPV, hepatitis B and hepatitis C are infections that can lead to liver cancer. And one that people may not be so familiar with is Helicobacter pylori. It's a bacterium that we find in the stomach that's causing a rise in stomach cancer. So it's really important for us as clinicians to know that, and for listeners who are in the lay audience, because again, at least 70% of liver cancers in the U.S. are caused by potentially modifier risk factors. As we said, Hep B, Hep C. There's a vaccine for hepatitis B since 1981. My children are all vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. But 70% of U.S. adults are not vaccinated. Thanks to you for reporting that. Excess body weight we'll talk about. And of course, we know fatty liver from excess body weight. In some people, not everyone, can lead to inflammation in the liver and cirrhosis and liver cancer. So let's talk about, Becky, the American Cancer Society, with you at the helm. You published these two annual reports with statistics. What trends have you noticed in, say, the past 10 to 20 years?
Yeah, that is actually the good news this year, I would say, is that year over year, what we found is that the cancer death rate is declining. This trend has been steady for the past 30 years. So since 1991, there's been an overall drop of 33% in the cancer death rate, meaning 33% reduction in your risk of dying from cancer compared to the early 90s. This translates to more than 4 million cancer deaths being averted during this time period. And it's mostly because of reductions in smoking, as you pointed out, how important that is for cancer risk. But it's also because of improvements in treatment during this time and screening for some cancers.
And we measure the success rate in the decrease in the likelihood of dying. I mean, that's the gold star. Because, again, you explain this very well later in Cancer Facts and Figures, but there's a statistical reference that we call lead time bias. With certain screening tests, we might find a cancer at an earlier stage, but if we don't have good therapies, it might not prolong the person's life, or it might not save his or her life. But the combination of the knowledge that you're sharing and screening and better treatments, overall, we are seeing some success. So would you say that cancers related to smoking, that the smoking epidemic, they kind of peaked in around 1991, yes?
Yes, yes. And that was really driven by lung cancer in men. Rates for lung cancer have always been higher in men than in women. And so, in fact, as I mentioned, that 4 million deaths averted, the number is actually twice as high for men compared to women, because of the much higher overall death rates in men. That's really driven by lung cancer. Mm-hmm.
So prevention, that's something. Primary prevention means, okay, if we can avoid the cause, we don't know what causes all cancers, I guess, because so many of them are multifactorial in cause. But primary prevention means, okay, if I know smoking bumps my risk dramatically for many cancers, I'm going to avoid smoking. I'll make that choice. But secondary prevention is sometimes all we have for cancers in which we really don't know what causes them. Secondary prevention is screening. What is a screening test? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So cancer screening tests are conducted in asymptomatic people. and they're usually in people who have average risk. Some screening tests detect precancerous lesions, so can actually prevent cancer from occurring. And we have those screening tests for cervical cancer and colorectal cancer. And then screening for breast, lung, and prostate cancers act a little differently in that they detect cancers at an early stage when they are easiest to treat and have better outcomes. Now, if you're having symptoms, that would not be a screening test. That is a diagnostic test.
And I think that's so important for people to hear because, and we're going to talk about this, what goes through people's minds when they say, well, I'm having a little rectal bleeding, but it's probably hemorrhoids. No, it's not normal. Or I was in conversation with somebody I met the other day who said, oh, yeah, I have iron deficiency anemia, but I've always had it. And my dad has it. And I said, it might sound like just kind of a passing thing, but we have to check into that. You really need to get that checked. It can be caused from anything from celiac disease to a cancer. And to just list it as a box you check is not good. So, but the big message that you like to share about a screen test is there's a risk-benefit ratio, meaning we want to find the benefit of finding an early cancer with a mammogram or low-dose CT scan we now have to look for early lung cancer. The earlier that we find a cancer, the better likelihood of survival for the patient. But if the test can be harmful, we don't want to put people through it because, say, colonoscopy is probably the most invasive screen, right? And so
right.
Back in the day when I was in training in the 80s, we were doing yearly stool samples that weren't always accurate. Sometimes would have false positives, meaning that it would show blood in the stool, but maybe it was from rare hamburger from yesterday, or you brushed your teeth too vigorously. So we don't want to put somebody through colonoscopy if there's a risk of perforation. So we want the screening test to be helpful in preventing and early detection of cancer, but not if it's potentially harmful. And that's a really delicate dance is what I was trying to think of. So it might be a blood test, it might be an x-ray or a procedure that we do. Can you give us an example, Becky, of a trend that has changed the way we practice medicine? And if we have about 2 minutes and we can take it into the next segment too.
Sure. I actually have a great example that's quite recent. We started reporting the increase in early onset colorectal cancer, early onset meaning before age 50, in the late 2000s, so around 2008, 2009. And had been tracking that trend over time with many scientific articles. And ultimately, that body of evidence contributed to a lowering in the age that was recommended to begin screening for colorectal cancer from age 50 to 45, both by the American Cancer Society in 2018 and then by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force in 2021.
And that affects everyone because I think one of the big misunderstandings among women, especially, the pink campaigns have been wonderful at driving women to mammography and have helped so many women with early detection and prolonging lives. Sorry. But women had long thought that colon cancer, colorectal cancer is a man's disease. So the big message is men and women have an equal lifetime risk of dying from colorectal cancer, maybe women at a slightly later age, would you say?
I would say that the risk is higher in men overall, but in people under 50, it's still a little bit higher, but there's not nearly the gap. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Because a lot of times women, yeah. as you're alluding to, women don't think they're at risk. I've had taxi mm-hmm. drivers in New York City actually tell me, oh, I don't need a colonoscopy because I'm a woman and I can't get that cancer. So, a myth that we still need to work to dispel.
Yeah, because women can't think that mammogram and done because we might get it at a slightly later age, but it's a clear and present danger for men and women, and more people die when we look at men and women combined. Am I right? More people die of colorectal cancer than breast cancer.
Yes.
But it's not a contest.
Yeah.
They're all important. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, more with Becky Siegel from the American Cancer Society.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
This is Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Colon cancer, the number two cause of cancer death. Initial screening has been lowered from age 50 to 45 because numbers are rising in younger people. Join the Blue Lights campaign in March. Put a strand of blue lights on your home or business, a blue light on your porch. Send a photo of your lights or of you wearing blue to info@bluelightscampaign.com, info@bluelightscampaign.com. Stop cancer, get screened.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor with Becky Siegel from the American Cancer Society. Becky, you're an epidemiologist and you study trends of cancer occurrence and cancer death rates by cancer site, which cancer it is, whether it's lung, breast, prostate, and it varies by geography, at least in the U.S. So we're talking about screening studies and epidemiology or studying trends in general. Let's talk about the pandemic, because we had to focus on treating COVID, preventing the spread of the disease, but it was a time that during which we had to postpone our elective procedures like knee replacements, hip replacements, but also screening studies. Have we seen an effect of that in terms of delay in diagnoses or increased death rates? Because I remember hearing that from March of 2020 to June alone, that three-month segment, 18,000 cases of colorectal cancer were either delayed or missed. Let's talk about the pandemic.
Sure. That's a great question. And of course, it's something that's on everyone's mind. So we have been tracking it closely. This was last year was the first year that we've had any incidence data on cancer incidents in 2020 when the pandemic first started. And what we found is that the overall incidence rate in men and women is about 9 to 10% lower than what we would have expected based on the rates in 2019. But there's quite a range by cancer type. So meaning that there was a deficit of less than 1% for testicular cancer, female brain cancer, but then it goes all the way up to 15 to 16% for thyroid cancer and melanoma. And the drop was also larger for in situ cancers and early stage diagnoses. Both of those are early stage, typically asymptomatic. And so what this tells us is that the largest deficits are for the less fatal cancers, and those cancers that are often either diagnosed incidentally during imaging or also diagnosed during screening.
And you make a good point. I think sometimes people feel guilty if they find out that they've had a cancer and they didn't know to act on it, but it's not always your fault. There are certain cancers that we can chase after, certain you can't, like thyroid cancer. Thyroid cancer, I was reading from Cancer Facts and Figures for our listeners, Cancer Facts and Figures 2024, you can Google that. It's a beautiful report with Dr. Becky Siegel is the main editor of that publication. Fantastic information, but I saw that thyroid cancers were being detected more often, but often incidentally. Maybe somebody was having a CAT scan of their head or I don't know what study would pick it up coincidentally, but we're picking up thyroid cancers or maybe have CAT scan of the chest or something. We're grateful when we find cancers like that, but there are good screening tests for the top cancers that cause death. So disparity, that's a term that's being used frequently in a lot of conversations. Could you tell us what that means? Is that socioeconomic or geographic? Because you report by state. Is it racial? Is it cultural? Let's talk about that.
Sure. It's a very big topic. We at the American Cancer Society actually evaluate all of cancer occurrence through a lens of disparities. And what disparity means is when there's a difference, a substantial or statistically significant difference in the cancer rate for a referent group, compared to a referent group, which would generally be whites or maybe sometimes the overall population. And we see these gaps for people in lower socioeconomic groups, for different racial groups, and also, as I mentioned earlier, by geography. And the disparities are caused both by differences in cancer risk factors, so differences in smoking. For example, Kentucky has the highest, among the highest smoking rates in the country and have had that distinction historically. And what that translates to is 3 to 4 times higher lung cancer rates in Kentucky compared to Utah, say, or California, where rates are the lowest. So we see these gaps in comparing various different groups. What's pretty, I guess, interesting and also sad is that it's counterintuitive, but cancer interventions typically widen disparities and sometimes even create them. A great example of this is breast cancer. Black women had lower breast cancer death rates than white women in the 1970s. And then in the 1980s, we had both the introduction of mammography and earlier detection, and then also improvements in treatment. And that widened the disparity that has continued to widen. So today, Black women have lower breast cancer incidence rates than white women, but 40% higher death rates. And there's a very similar disparity for endometrial cancer. Black and white women have the same incidence rates, and Black women are twice as likely to die from that disease than white women.
And I guess breast cancer also can be the occurrence or the incidence can be affected by things like waiting to have babies. Estrogen is food for breast cancer. So if you're pregnant and the estrogen is going to, you know, getting your uterus ready and, you know, supplying the baby, then it takes away from breast tissue. Is that that's a very basic way to describe it, but maybe that's part of the disparity as well. People who wait later in life to have children or, you know, or don't have children at all, that increases the risk for breast cancer, right?
Yes, that is true. I would say that influence on breast cancer risk is pretty small. You really see that influence of reproductive differences if you look at breast cancer rates globally. But in terms of the female population within the U.S., yes, some of the differences, like especially between Hispanic and white women, where Hispanic women have especially lower breast cancer rates, differences in reproductive patterns are thought to contribute to that.
Mm-hmm. So what cancers are on the rise? I know of the top 10 cancers, we should talk about what the top 10 cancers are. 6 of those top 10 cancers are on the rise. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. It's actually quite concerning because, you know, we've had this great progress in terms of reducing mortality year over year, even during the pandemic, which was a concern. We were wondering if that mortality rate was going to increase or even stabilize, but we've seen continued progress there. But I really think we've dropped the ball in this country on cancer prevention. And the reason I say that is because of the 10 most common cancers, the two most common, breast and prostate cancer, are both increasing in incidence. And in fact, as I mentioned to you earlier, prostate cancer has the steepest increase of any cancer, increasing by 3% per year, which is a rapid increase. The other top 10 cancers with increasing incidence are melanoma, kidney cancer, endometrial cancer, and pancreatic cancer, which is concerning because it's one of those cancers that you were mentioning earlier where we really just don't have a lot of information, both in terms of risk factors or good treatment. And so one of the more fatal cancers.
And really, we mentioned kidney cancer. We don't screen for that. That's one of those cancers that if you have symptoms like blood in the urine or even, I guess, back pain or sometimes belly pain. I found a case, I'm on the sidebar for a second. We talk about telehealth. Telehealth is good if it's a follow-up visit or we just want to catch up with the patient and say, how are you making out with those medications I prescribed? But first visit, in my office one day, I had three women under age 30 scheduled to see me with the same complaint, acid reflux. I examined the first one. She had pain in her right upper belly. I did an ultrasound, 6-centimeter kidney cancer. Second woman I examined had an enlarged liver. We found a familial condition, hereditary liver disease. The third young woman had acid reflux. Had I seen them all via telehealth, I wouldn't have been able to examine them and maybe started out with a little, acid reflux med and delay. So it's all so magical, really. So breast cancer, that's increasing since when? The mid-2000s?
Yes, that's correct. It's a small increase for breast cancer, about 0.5% per year. But I think we're going to talk about this in the next segment. The increase is steeper for women younger than 50, but the increase is about 1% per year compared to 0.5% per year in women 50 and older.
Mm-hmm. And liver cancer, we're saying that's one that's on the rise. It's not in the top 10, but it's tripled. Partly, as a GI doc, what we're seeing is a lot more fatty liver. Fatty liver is taking over the planet because of obesity. If fat's deposited in the liver, fortunately, most people do not go on to what we call steatohepatitis or fat-induced hepatitis that can go to cirrhosis and liver cancer. But it's another big reason why we have to pay attention to obesity. And with that, let's take a little break and hear about this week's Real Champion. And when we come back, more from Becky Siegel from the American Cancer Society. And now for your real champion. I call this segment, Angie Davis Fights Colorectal Cancer. Colorectal cancer has been gaining extra attention in the healthcare world in recent years because of the alarming rise in cases in younger people, under age 50, even under age 40. The change has been so dramatic that the initial screening age for people who are free of symptoms was lowered from age 50 to 45. Now, for many lay people, they just as soon not talk about their bowel movements, let alone a bowel prep and colonoscopy. Well, let me tell you about a passionate group of people who are not shy about discussing number two. In fact, their loud and proud collective voice has been very successful in helping the cause to erase colorectal cancer. Fight Colorectal Cancer, the largest patient advocacy group in the country. The mission? To find a cure for colorectal cancer and bring hope to patients and their families. These relentless champions of hope focus on three areas: raising awareness and patient education, research
and patient advocacy. This is a well-oiled machine that has held my interest for a number of years. Especially impressive is United in Blue. This third annual event is a two-week display of 27,400 flags on the National Mall in front of the Washington Monument. On March 9th, over 300 volunteers measured every row on the ground with a tape and meticulously placed the flags, creating a magnificent display described as breathtaking yet somber. The display is intended to be a visual reminder of the 27,000 plus people under age 50 projected to be diagnosed with colorectal cancer in the year 2030. Then on March 12th, the Day on the Hill opened with a rally including Fight Colorectal Cancer and dozens of nonprofits coming together as the colorectal cancer community to effect policy change. Colorectal cancer is the only one of the top five cancers that doesn't have its own line item in the grant budget. So, Fight Colorectal Cancer coordinated meetings with congressional members of the Colorectal Cancer Caucus to demand funding, more research, more treatments, so more lives will be saved. The leader behind this powerful movement is Fight Colorectal Cancer President Angie Davis. Angie has always had her heart in improving public health. Her best friend's mother and then a young work colleague died from colorectal cancer. Her own father-in-law has had so many polyps removed, he credits screening for saving his life. Her first position was at the University of South Carolina, where she helped design a very effective screening program for colorectal cancer. She and her staff would go into barbershops in underserved areas. They talked to barbers and customers and helped them get past the ick factor surrounding discussion of, as she gently says, poop. Then the university contracted 44 GI doctors to work at a discount, and 80,000 patients pledged to get screened. But Angie wanted even more connection with patient advocacy, and in 2011 joined the Fight team, which included 15 survivors. She has successfully grown a community program that now includes over 230 survivors. An advocacy group is vitally important because it includes shared voices, and she has seen tremendous growth, patients and families supporting each other. Early on at a gathering in Washington, D.C., Angie approached a survivor who appeared quite healthy and asked, "What's the picture you want to see?" And the woman stood in front of the White House and posed in a strong arm position. Within a month, Angie received 50,000 pictures of patients and survivors posing with a strong arm, united in the fight. Well, after 13 years, Angie continues to grow their reach, working with state and federal officials to provide funding for screening colonoscopy. They also partner with national medical societies like the American Gastroenterologic Association to provide an entire collection of resources for patients, providers, insurers, making sure everyone is aware of the policy wins that increase access to colonoscopy after a patient has a positive stool test. She works with the Congressional Black Caucus to fight colorectal cancer in the Black community, where occurrence and death rates are higher than with other races. And in Kentucky, helping form a partnership between pharmacists and insurers to offer stool tests, providing the first pharmacist-led screening program in the nation. Climb for a Cure is Fight Colorectal Cancer's cornerstone fundraising event in multiple states, with climbing the mountain symbolizing each survivor and caregiver's fight against this cancer. So whether it's raising awareness with a call on Congress, joining hands in Times Square, providing extensive resource libraries of information about screening, surgery, and chemotherapy, raising funding or pushing policy for research, finding comfort and support among patients and survivors sharing their stories, or helping a patient face a new diagnosis. Each is a step in the direction to erase colorectal cancer. We salute you, Angie Davis, and all the members and volunteers of Fight Colorectal Cancer. You're real champions. Visit the website, fightcolorectalcancer.org. Then join the fight. We can outline information and provide the talk, but we ask each of you to do the walk. Get screened. It could save your life.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
And welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're here with Becky Siegel from the American Cancer Society, and we're learning so much about changing and shifts of cancer rates and cancer death. Becky, we talked about the top 10 cancers, and six of them were seeing some change, some rises in breast and prostate that you mentioned, melanoma, please wear your sunscreen, kidney cancers, endometrial, and pancreas. Are you seeing any other shifts? I know we're going to talk about cancers that are appearing more often in young people, but I think it's really interesting the message you want to share about middle-aged people and people who were born after the 1950s. Let's talk about those two areas.
Sure, I would love to. So one of the other major findings this year is that we looked at the changes in the percentage of cancer patients in these very large age groups, differences between 1995 and today. And what we found was that the proportion of people newly diagnosed with cancer who were age 50 to 64, so we call those middle-aged people, that proportion increased from 25% in 1995 to 30%. It's a pretty big increase. And at the same time, people who are 65 and older, that percentage decreased from 61% to 58%. So even though most people who are diagnosed are over 65, that percentage is decreasing slightly, and there's more people who are middle-aged being diagnosed. And this is despite both of these age groups increasing in the general population. The other aspect of this is you're probably wondering, well, what about people under 50? And I also expected that proportion to increase because there are several cancers that are increasing in younger adults. But in fact, the proportion of people diagnosed under 50 actually decreased slightly. And that's despite that being the only age group with increasing incidence during this time period. And it's because they had such a large drop in representation in the general population.
Meaning fewer, our fertility rate is dropping. I think across Europe, I was reading about that, or fertility or reproductive rate is a man and woman reproduce. And in order to keep the population going, you want to have at least 2.1 children to replace the mom and the dad. And across Europe, it's 1.5. Italy is 1.2. I think in the U.S., I looked that up recently, it's 1.7. But as you say, if that shift in population, because people now are having fewer children, it's not like post-World War II when, you know, people were coming home, they were so happy to be alive, they're making big families. I know in my neighborhood, there were people with 10 and 12 children. And we're not seeing that now. And as we said earlier, women are waiting later to conceive, and all those factors influence the proportion, as you say, that yes, we're seeing a rise in younger people, but if there are fewer young people related to the other age groups, is that a good way to look at it?
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. That is. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit complicated to think about because the under 50 were the only age group where cancer incidence was increasing during this time period, you would expect them to represent more people in the in the cancer patient population, but it's because of that big drop as you're describing.
Well, I mentioned earlier I went to Memorial Sloan Kettering for my training in GI nutrition, but then I went back on Friday for a fantastic seminar on young onset colorectal cancer and GI malignancies in general, among other topics. And obesity and lack of activity, of course, they're not good for you, but our society has always had obesity. There have always been people who carry too much weight. Is there something more to it? And that's not something you can answer. You're identifying, and then we have to have, I guess, epidemiologists who look for cause and effect. But you have to wonder if it's processed foods. It's not, maybe not just the amount of food that we eat, but the processed foods. Because as a GI doc, I know, I mean, studies that processed meats, bacon, ham, you know, lunch meats and bacon and sausage and all those kinds of meats are now considered type 1 carcinogen. So collecting all this information is so helpful and hopefully will lead to answers. So what can listeners do to decrease their risks? We talked about smoking. What are some of the statistics that might convince our listeners? I know people who smoke cigarettes are 25 times more likely to develop lung cancer.
Right. And smoking is really the leading cause of preventable cancer death, even though we've had this steep decline in smoking rates in this country, down to, I think it's 12%, something like that overall now, and much lower in some groups of people. But the problem is that the effects of smoking lag about four decades, actually, for lung cancer. And so we're still seeing the impact of those high smoking rates on cancer. Lung cancer causes more deaths every year, even with these low smoking rates, than breast, prostate, and colorectal cancers combined.
Mm-hmm. And I know I do a lot of lectures in women's health and screening for cancers in general, not just colorectal, but I was startled when I read about the statistics that women who smoke are more likely to die from colorectal cancer than men who smoke. There's so many puzzle pieces, but again, the more pieces of information that we can share with listeners, the more likely that they'll consider trying to shy away from cigarettes and secondhand smoke too. People with secondhand smoke, but for our listeners as well, people get lung cancer 20% of the time. It's not from smoking at all. So we don't want people to have that stigma of, you know, if they have lung cancer, it's not always smoking, but that's one of the things that we can affect the change. And talk to your doctors, to our listeners. There is a way to screen for lung cancer. For those who have smoked a minimum of 20 pack years. So that means if you smoked one pack a day for 20 years or two packs a day for 10 years, healthy adults between the ages of 50 and 80 should talk to their doctors about getting a low-dose CAT scan, because if you get a CAT scan every year, we don't want the radiation to bump your risk. I mean, all these are thoughtful decisions, Becky. Would you agree?
And yes.
So that's regardless how many years that you've stopped smoking. We used to think that if you had stopped smoking for 15 years, that your risk probably decreased. I can't speak to those things, but please talk to your doctor and ask what about the possibility of being screened for lung cancer. We don't know long-term effects of vaping, so we can't comment on that, or inhaling inflammatory particles with vaping or marijuana, of any of these issues, but the ACS will continue to study those trends, I'm sure. And, of course, getting mammograms. But I think the big thing, if we could talk about a little bit, is family history. Family history, you know, sometimes we could say it's genetic that makes family history blossom, but maybe if you grow up in the same family household and you have similar habits, it's environmental in the end anyway, yes? What does your report say about family history?
Yes, that's absolutely true. You know, there are those genetic mutations that really elevate your risk, like the BRCA mutations, but those are very, very low prevalence in the general population. So it's thought that that family history of cancer is really a combination of what's called low penetrance mutations, and then similarities in behavior that influence your cancer risk. So regardless of what the cause is, it's so important to know your family history in terms of cancer and then talk to your doctor about it at a young age so that you can decide together when is the appropriate time for you to begin screening.
I love that you just emphasized talk to your doctor at a young age. Don't wait till you're 40 or 45 and say, do I have to do extra steps? No, when you're 20 and 25, find out, hey, if my mom or dad had colon cancer at 45, my screening starts at 35. You don't wait till you're at the starting line and think, I probably should have started 5 years earlier. And even the family history, it's so important for people to ask colon polyps as well as colon cancer. And as you mentioned, BRCA, BRCA1, BRCA2, that's maybe 2 to 5% cases of breast cancer. I mean, it's a pretty small number. So if you have a family history, my own family history, my mother had breast cancer. My older sisters, identical twins, both had breast cancer. One of them has a daughter who had bilateral mastectomy. It's all through my family. No BRCA, not in the twins. Not in any of us. Well, I haven't been tested for BRCA, but it's not going to change the number of people. So I get a yearly mammogram, and every six, in between, I get a yearly MRI. And that's recommended depending on your family history. And if I didn't tell my doctor that, they'd say, you're negative BRCA. So it's so important. And lastly, you talked about prostate. It's so important there, Becky. At age 50, talk to your doctor about PSA testing. And the good thing is, we didn't want too many false positive PSAs were leading men to get biopsies and things that could be harmful, right? So, but there are new ways to detect, we don't have time to get into that, but that are less invasive. So talk to your doctor, and you stressed Black men especially, you want to start talking to your doctor at an earlier age. Or if you have a family history of BRCA, you might want to talk to your doctor when you're 40. Any other comments about those cancers and what people can do?
No, I would also say that if you are having symptoms, you know your body better than anyone else. If you are having persistent symptoms that you know aren't right, follow up with your doctor and advocate for yourself. I have heard so many stories of young people with colorectal cancer who could not get their doctor to give them a colonoscopy and then were diagnosed with stage 4 disease. So please advocate for yourself and insist. If your doctor won't take you seriously, try another doctor.
Let's take a little break, and we'll be back with more from Becky Siegel from the American Cancer Society.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
This is Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Colon cancer, the number two cause of cancer death. Initial screening has been lowered from age 50 to 45 because numbers are rising in younger people. Join the Blue Lights campaign in March. Put a strand of blue lights on your home or business, a blue light on your porch. Send a photo of your lights or of you wearing blue to info@bluelightscampaign.com, info@bluelightscampaign.com. Stop cancer, get screened.
And now in our final segment of Your Radio Doctor with Becky Siegel from the American Cancer Society. Becky, we have learned so much today from listening to trends that are happening. Six of the top most common cancers are increasing, And if people want to read more about cancer facts and figures, your website is fantastic. cancer.org/statistics will take you right to cancer facts and figures. And we've learned that smoking can increase the risk of not just the usual lung cancer that you might think and cancers of the mouth and throat, but pancreas, cervical, kidney, bladder, stomach, liver, colorectal, even a certain type of leukemia. So, and esophageal, forgot one of my babies. Alcohol, we want to ask people to stop at one serving a day for women, two servings a day for men, because it can increase the risk of, again, mouth and throat cancers, esophageal, liver, colorectal, breast, and stomach. And if you don't know that, you should, and it will help you make better decisions. And of course, weight, we know obesity is such an issue in our country, but it increases risk for several cancers: uterine, esophageal, liver, stomach, kidney, pancreas, colorectal, gallbladder, even ovary. So keep these ideas in mind because it will help you be more committed. Becky, what's your take-home message?
I would reiterate everything you just said. Don't smoke. Try to maintain a healthy weight, as hard as that is. Be physically active. Physical activity separate of body weight influences your cancer risk. And then eat a healthy diet that is high in whole grains, fruits, and vegetables, and low in processed food, especially processed meat, which is classified as a carcinogen because of its relationship with colorectal cancer. And then, as we mentioned earlier, knowing your family history of cancer and talking to your doctor, and also so important to have your children vaccinated with the HPV vaccine, because as Marianne mentioned earlier, it prevents multiple cancers, cervical cancer, oral cancers, which are really on the rise, among the steepest increase in actually mortality rates right now for HPV-associated oral cancers. So, so important. And also, one thing that we actually didn't mention, cervical cancer incidence rates are decreasing steeply in women in their 20s because these are the first group to be vaccinated. But in women in their 30s and early 40s, cervical cancer incidence is increasing by almost 2% per year. So also important, even if you've had the vaccine, to be screened according to recommendations. And then, again, following up on symptoms. If you have persistent symptoms that you know aren't right, please see your doctor.
Yes. And as you say, Becky, the reason we're seeing a jump in colorectal cancer in younger people, A, they're young and invincible and they think, oh, I couldn't have cancer. But providers, please, if your provider, your doctor, or nurse practitioner mm-hmm. says, yeah, it's not very likely, why go to colonoscopy? Find another provider to discuss it with. Fight for yourself. And the other vaccine, I know people, vaccinations with COVID, people were shying away and having all kinds of opinions, but the time-tested ones right now are HPV is essential in arresting cervical or pharyngeal anal cancer, life-threatening cancers, and hepatitis B vaccine. Since 1981, my children all, you know, were vaccinated, medical workers, but 70% of U.S. adults are not vaccinated for hepatitis B. It's safe. It's been around since 1981. Go, Becky Siegel from American Cancer Society. You are terrific. Your work is incredible. And for people who want to read cancer facts and figures, my favorite website on the planet is cancer.org. And you can find cancer facts and figures there. You can Google cancer facts and figures 2024, or as you said, cancer.org/statistics. Becky Siegel, thank you for joining us today. You're wonderful.
It was really fun. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday at 5 p.m. here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen to any of our shows again or a champion segment on audacy.com, AUDACY.com. Thanks to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, and for our association with Helio, the medical media company and information platform that offers the latest in healthcare news. Visit Helio.com for great articles on colorectal cancer. Now, a special request. This week, we welcome the first day of spring, the time when we celebrate new life. What's more special than welcoming a new baby into the world? For most of us, buying a bag of disposable diapers is not a financial hardship. For a needy mother who may need several bags a month, it can be a true struggle. Your radio doctor is sponsoring Diapers for Darlings, a diaper drive to support needy mothers and help them care and comfort their precious little darlings. Easy to donate. Visit yougivegoods.com. Scroll down to find an event, then search Diapers for Darlings. So easy. All diapers are delivered to Catholic social services, but know that the moms are people of all faiths. What they share is a need for our help. Help to welcome a new baby. Visit yougivegoods.com and search Diapers for Darlings. And please continue to pray for peace in our world, our country, our families, and each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. Always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.